just like that, we're starting this week's episode the same way the last one ended. How appropriate. Hello, my friends. We meet again on another Sunday. You are listening to The Royal Ramble, and I'm your host, Blaine the Brain. If you belong to my part of the world, it is officially daylight savings. We are literally saving daylight. The clocks are springing forward, but I will be winding back, all the way back to last week, as a matter of fact, as I review the AEW Revolution event in its entirety. That's still to come, but for now, as it has been a news-heavy week, let us all take a look and listen to this week's news brief. You can tell that we're truly on the road to WrestleMania when the WWE starts announcing its lineup for the annual Hall of Fame ceremony. Like the last few years, this year's event will take place right after WrestleMania SmackDown on Friday, April 5th, and Paul Levesque announced the first three inductees this week. It'll be Paul Heyman, Bull Nakano, and the US Express entering the class of 2024. As announced on Raw this week, Seth Rollins has officially been cleared for in-ring competition and expected to return to the active roster in the coming weeks. I would honestly rather not see Rollins do any matches on television between now and WrestleMania, so as to not re-aggravate the injury and put himself in a greater risk for the big tag match. Former WWE Chairman Vince McMahon has reportedly sold over $5 million worth of TKO stock this week, further cementing his exit from the company, it would seem. AEW star Sammy Guevara has been suspended due to ignoring the company's concussion protocols in a Rampage match with Jeff Hardy a couple weeks ago. It is unknown at this point how long Guevara is expected to be out of action. Former New Japan talent Kazuchika Okada is officially All Elite as of this past Wednesday. The former IWGP heavyweight champion made his official debut in an angle with the Young Bucks on Dynamite, turning heel in an attack on Eddie Kingston. Okada has reportedly signed a 3-year deal. Reported by Venues Now, AEW Revolution grossed over $1 million in ticket sales, with the average price of a single ticket being $55. Former Tough Enough contestant Daniel Rodimer is currently wanted on charge of open murder, which is a combination of first- and second-degree murder. Following an altercation at the Resort World Las Vegas Resort and Casino, Rodimer was in a fight with 47-year-old Christopher Tapp and allegedly landed a blow to the head of Tapp, which was considered premeditated and deliberate. Tapp later died of his injuries in the hospital. Fans and colleagues of former WWE Women's Champion Bianca Belair continues to show their support of the WWE star, who was a recent victim of a barrage of racially motivated hateful comments, apparently coming off the recent release of the WWE 2K24 video game with Belair as the cover art. I, for one, cannot believe that this sort of thing is still happening in 2024, but I will join those in support of Belair, and those supposed fans should be ashamed of themselves. Let's be better than that. I would have liked to end this segment with more positive news, but hopefully this ugly incident doesn't affect Belair too badly, and she can move on and continue to ascend to greatness. So that is your news of the week. The week actually started off on a high note last Sunday, as it was Sting's final performance as an in-ring talent, and what a night it turned out to be. Let's take a look back and switch focus to AEW Revolution. It took place from the historic Greensboro Coliseum, where the icon experienced many more magical moments, I'm sure. The main card began with a match for the TNT Championship. It was Christian Cage putting the belt on the line against up-and-comer Daniel Garcia, who was the sort of last-minute replacement for Adam Copeland, who was recovering from injury. I didn't think this was a particularly great match, but it served its purpose and definitely got the crowd into the show. There was a spot early on where Cage went for a leapfrog but seemed to land awkwardly coming down and ended up feigning a knee or ankle injury, and almost right away Garcia called foul on that, though the referee wasn't as wise to Christian's scheming. Nevertheless, Nick Wayne tried an attack on the floor but got himself tossed over the barricade into the timekeeper's area. Killswitch then got involved and chokeslammed Garcia into the ring apron. Christian landed a frog splash for a near fall, and then Daddy Magic ran out to brawl with Killswitch. Shayna Wayne then got in Menard's face and tried to slap him, but he blocked it, only for Killswitch to attack him from behind. Killswitch and Menard then fought to the back, and as Garcia had the advantage in the ring, Shayna hopped on the apron to distract the ref, which allowed her son Nick to re-enter the match and hang Garcia's neck off the top rope, leading to Christian hitting the kill switch to keep the title. Man, these babyfaces just don't have many friends, do they? Lexi Nair is in the back, I guess trying to get an interview with Bryan Danielson, who is kind of shadow boxing in the background. You know, I just can't take Lexi seriously anymore ever since this whole angle with Athena on ROH for the three people who watch that show. I have great difficulty separating Lexi the interviewer from Lexi the minion. But anyway, she doesn't actually get to do the interview because Danielson is too focused, which he basically just explains to the viewing audience. And that leads right into the one-on-one match between Bryan Danielson and Eddie Kingston. Before Kingston comes out, Renee Paquette tries to get an interview with him, but he just walks right past her. The stipulation here is that if Kingston wins, Danielson has to shake his hand in front of everyone as a sign of respect. This is where the show really turned the corner for me. I'm not a Kingston fan, but I think this was his best career match to date. His selling was tremendous, and I thought the two of them told a really good story here. Kingston had the early advantage, but the tables turned when he missed a backhand chop and connected with the ring post. Danielson then went to work on Kingston's hand for the rest of the match, and as I said, Kingston did a brilliant job of selling the injury, especially when trying to execute moves that would normally require the use of his right hand. Danielson hit a variety of different suplexes throughout the match, and then Kingston instinctively fired back with the hurricane, but doing further damage to his own hand. Danielson then kicked the hand and landed with a psycho knee, but Kingston kicked out. Kingston tried fighting with the one good hand and eventually sucked it up to deliver a left arm lariat and then a powerbomb to finally put Danielson away. After the match, Danielson teased not shaking Kingston's hand, but eventually does honor his agreement and they shake and go their separate ways. In fact, Danielson actually raised Kingston's hand as well, which was kind of interesting. The pacing of these shows is just starting to become so familiar. Each match just kind of blends right into the next, and next up was the 8-man scramble, which was originally supposed to be the Meat Madness match, but supposedly a couple of the individuals who were originally scheduled to be in the match were unable to participate, and therefore the match was changed. It was Powerhouse Hobbs versus Chris Jericho versus Wardlow versus Lance Archer versus the newcomer Magnus versus Dante Martin versus Brian Cage versus Hook, with the promise that the winner would receive a future world title match, which seemed odd, especially in the case of Magnus, who's literally had one AEW match before this. I mean, are we just going to ignore the rankings already? The match got underway with all the meaty guys taking control of the ring as the crowd chanted meat with every shot, and I was looking all over for Sean Stasiak. Archer executed the Undertaker rope walk at one point, or at least his version of it, but was caught on the way down with a spinebuster from Hobbs. There was a cool sequence where four guys were set up in each corner to take superplexes simultaneously. Dante was a little off during this match. He caught his foot on the top rope attempting a tope, and all I could think about was that nasty ladder spot that injured him last year, but fortunately he seemed okay afterwards. Hook and Jericho worked together and applied a Red Rum and Lion Tamer at the same time to Wardlow. I'm not sure who would have won in that case if Wardlow had tapped, but Cage broke that up. Hobbs then charged at Jericho on the floor, who caught him coming in with what I initially thought was a fire extinguisher, but apparently it was just some kind of smoke machine, as Taz had pointed out. Back in the ring, Wardlow hit a massive powerbomb on Dante, almost like a last ride, to finally pick up the win. This was kind of expected, and to be honest, the Undisputed Kingdom needed some momentum on their side. The international title was defended up next, with Orange Cassidy putting the belt on the line against Roderick Strong. Cassidy had his ribs taped up due to injury sustained in previous encounters, and Strong targeted the rib and back area for the majority of the match. He delivered a succession of his famous backbreakers, and then a gut-wrench powerbomb from the top rope, dropping Cassidy across the top turnbuckle. Cassidy mounted a bit of a comeback, but as he set up for the orange punch, Strong beat him to the punch, so to speak, with a flying knee strike, and then the end of heartache to win the title. After the match, the Undisputed Kingdom looked like they were setting up for a post-match attack, but then out of nowhere, a very caveman-looking Kyle O'Reilly joined his former teammates in the ring, with a very intense look on his face. O'Reilly ended up hugging Strong, who offered Kyle an Undisputed t-shirt, which Kyle placed back on Strong's shoulder. He whispered something into Roddy's ear before finally making his exit up the ramp. FTR versus Claudio and Moxley was up next. The BCC came out wearing Road Warrior shoulder pads. I'm not sure of the significance of the reference, other than maybe being in Greensboro, but aside from that, it kind of felt random. The match was anything but random, though. This one at least had a story attached to it, though I'm amazed that they didn't get a stipulation or at least extended time period after the way their last one ended. It was another very good match, as I'm sure everyone expected. Cash was isolated in the BCC corner for the most part. He made the hot tag to Dax, and then there was a spot out of the Steiner Brothers playbook where FTR set up Claudio with a doomsday device, but then Claudio actually caught Dax coming off the turnbuckle with a belly-to-belly suplex off of Cash's shoulders, and Dax was just oozing blood after this spot, though I'm not sure what actually caused that. I think he might have connected with the ring post earlier. There was a really cool spot where Claudio just ran up the top rope and came back with a European uppercut to Dax off Moxley's shoulders, sort of like their own doomsday device. Mox planted Cash with a Death Rider, but made a very lax cover, and Cash almost surprised him with a crucifix, but Mox kicked out. Dax then tried re-entering the ring, but was caught in a rear naked choke by Moxley, and Claudio trapped Cash on the other side of the ring with the same move, and eventually Dax passed out, similar to the finish from a few weeks ago, giving the BCC the win. Each team just kind of nodded at the other as a sign of respect after the match. Toni Storm put her women's title on the line against Deonna Purrazzo up next, and before Storm even came out, Mariah May entered, basically cosplaying as the old Toni Storm, and I legit thought it was Toni, as I'm sure most of the audience did as well, which I think goes to show that Mariah May really isn't very unique, and I still don't get the big deal about her. Toni tries to get in Deonna's head early with a few pie faces, but Deonna wouldn't have any of it. The basic finish is almost the exact finish that I predicted last week, where Deonna gets the Queen's Gambit and Toni taps out, but Mariah had the referee distracted. As Deonna releases the hold to deal with Mariah, Luther distracts her from the other side, giving Toni enough recovery time to get back to her feet and hit the pile driver for the win. This was probably the low point of the show. I really wish they would give these women's matches more time. This could have been something special. Will Ospreay made his official debut as part of the AEW roster up next against fellow Don Callis family member Kanosuke Takeshita, with Don Callis joining the announcers on commentary. The match was just a thrill ride. It was an excellent showcase of both guys, especially Takeshita, who really needed a standout performance. However, I can see why certain wrestling historians wouldn't like the match, as they didn't do a lot to protect each other. But to the average wrestling fan, it was very exciting, and the pace just picked up with every move. They started just slapping the taste out of each other's mouths. Those slaps eventually turned into forearms, and I mean stiff forearms. They really ate these shots. Takeshita had a beautiful counter for the Os Cutter into a Blue Thunderbomb in midair. He then attempted to execute a brainbuster from the top rope, and this may have been the truest definition of the move, as Ospreay completely missed the buckle and slid down, almost landing on the back of his neck, which could have been a lot more disastrous than it was. That was a move that was very unnecessary and definitely cringeworthy. Takeshita ran at a seated Ospreay with a knee strike, but Ospreay got a shoulder up right before three. He then delivered a wheelbarrow suplex, but Ospreay sprung right up and hit the hidden blade, only for Takeshita to kick out at one. Ospreay finally hit the Tiger Driver 91, and then another hidden blade to finally get the win. Fans came to their feet to show their support of both guys. The world title match was up next. It was a three-way dance or triple threat between defending champion Samoa Joe, Hangman Adam Page, and Swerve Strickland. I'm not a fan of titles changing hands in multi-person matches, so I'm glad that wasn't the case here, but it was a fine showcase of all three guys, and it advanced storylines and characters, so I was all for it. Joe dominates early on, which forced Swerve and Hangman to put aside their differences and work together against the bigger man. They executed a double-team powerbomb to Joe out of the corner. Swerve then hit the Swerve Stomp to Joe, and I cannot begin to describe how much I hate this move, where the recipient just has to sit there like an idiot waiting to take it. It looks so ridiculous. But Hangman reached through and pulled the referee out to break the pin. Page then nailed both guys with the world title belt and then hit a buckshot on, I believe, Swerve, but there's no ref to count. Joe then locked on the Coquina clutch on Page, and Swerve broke that up with a sky twister press. Nana then takes possession of the belt and tries offering it to Swerve, but Swerve waves it off, saying he doesn't need it. He tries for a pin on Joe, but then Hangman starts beating on the referee to make sure Swerve doesn't win this match. Swerve hits the JML driver on Page, and then Joe takes Swerve out with a half-and-half suplex before going back to the Coquina clutch on Page to finally get the submission victory and keep the title. I think they finally solidified the double turn here between Swerve and Paige, and I'd expect Nana's group to turn on Swerve any day now. Before the main event, Ric Flair and Ricky Steamboat came out to be seated at ringside. The Young Bucks then came out dressed like bananas in pajamas. I'm not sure what was with their ring gear, but it looked ridiculous. Before Sting's entrance, there was a vignette where Sting sat alone in a movie theater and then watched some of his own career highlights on the big screen. This kind of reminded me of a silent movie, and I thought it was great. Sting was then joined on stage by his two sons, who were each dressed as an older version of Sting. We had a Wolfpack Sting and a Surfer Sting, and they both looked amazing. Sting finally came to the ring to the tune of his old Metallica song. Darby couldn't wait anymore and dives right into the Bucks at ringside, and the match was underway. It was apparently no DQ in addition to being a tornado tag as Sting's sons entered the ring, and along with Sting and Darby, they delivered Stinger splashes to each of the Bucks in opposite corners of the ring. Sting then pulled out a glass window pane and placed it across a stack of set-up chairs in the entranceway, and somewhere Jack Perry was smirking. Nicholas hit a Falcon Arrow at one point to Darby off the entrance stage through a table down below. Later in the match, Darby set up about a 20-foot ladder in the ring and executed a swanton off the ladder to the floor. He was supposed to land on one of the Bucks who moved, and Darby just went crashing through the glass window, and I mean he shattered it. His back looked like it had been used as a dartboard afterwards, though instead of darts, they were using knives. This looked gross, and I will be amazed if this guy is still wrestling in his 40s. Sting then climbs another ladder in the ring and gets planted through a table with a powerbomb, but then rises right back up to his feet, showing the Bucks how to truly no-sell. The Bucks tried to use one of the tag belts at ringside later, but they're cut off by Steamboat, who they dispose of rather quickly. They try to go after Sting with a chair, but Flair covers Sting, and they basically super kick him out of the way, and then take out Steamboat as well. The Bucks hit the EVP trigger, but Sting kicks out. They then hit the move again, and this time Sting kicks out at 1. Darby then comes back in with a coffin drop to Matthew, and then Sting applies the Scorpion Deathlock to Nicholas, who furiously taps out, so Sting gets to ride off into the sunset as still the World Tag Team Champion, which I ultimately think was the right call. He started to give his farewell speech, but was unfortunately cut short as they ran out of pay-per-view time, which was very unfortunate. Why they didn't replay this footage on Dynamite this week is beyond me. So that will wrap up another episode. I will be back next week to talk about the continued build for WrestleMania, Stand and Deliver, etc. Until then, I leave you with an ABC ya.